We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal. Boys and girls, my name is Ty Hildenbrandt, that fine gentleman over there. In the heart of the Midwest, Chicago, Illinois, Dan Rubenstein. Sir.
Yeah.
Need a health check. I'm sorry.
Sinus Watch 2022.
How we doing?
I'm all right. I can't complain, Ty. There's a lot that's going on in the world that makes me feel extremely fortunate. And if the worst thing I have going is a little bit of a boo-boo in my sinuses,
the
in my
sinus
throat, I'm all
boo-boo.
Right.
Yeah.
A sinus boo-boo. I'm pumping the fluids. I'm trying to sleep. I'm trying to lay down. I'm going to go get some soup for lunch. It's the off season, so we get to get weird. We get to get fun. So I do this for a living. I can't even begin to complain to me.
Well, look, today we are going to pick up where we left off.
Yeah.
On the show we did earlier in this week. You had 5 questions for me and then a couple to try and make me uncomfortable.
Yes.
As you often do. I have 5 questions for you and then some that probably won't make you nearly as uncomfortable, but are intended to prod a little bit deeper.
You told me no pizza and no relationship questions, and that really kind of hurt. That really, like, you didn't want to steer into what I consider to be my wheelhouse as a non-pizzeria owner and as a non-licensed relationship expert. But that's okay. We'll
it's
get
the
off. You got some good college football questions.
We're trying to broaden your horizons, Dan. So we'll get into all that and much, much more. We appreciate your support throughout this long, cold doldrums of an off season, but it is starting to warm up. Various quadrants of the country. We appreciate you stopping on by. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. Listen the whole way through. Write in at solidverbal@gmail.com. Let us know if you have any thoughts or feedback or questions, what have you, things that we should cover as we progress here through the off season. We always welcome that feedback. Verballers.com, of course, is where you can find all of our bonus content. You can get access to this show, all of our shows a little bit early. We also video all of these shows. So not only can you hear Dan's grovelly voice, but you can also see the sights of fatherhood if you go to verballers.com.
Wait, see the sights of fatherhood? I'm wearing this exhaustion on my face.
A little bit, Dan.
In HD?
Just a little bit.
That's fair. That's okay. That's real. I mean, at certain points, we all wear our lives on our faces. And you had a mysterious day job that... left you physically not your best. And so, yeah, here we are. I've had better days physically, but we're starting our strength training, our dual strength training together.
That's right.
And maybe that's going to really up our looks in 1080p. If not 4K, Ty, I'm willing to go 4K.
I'm willing to
really
go 4K. I don't know if I've got the internet for 4K, but I'm willing to try.
Well, we can record and edit. I'm good with that.
Last but not least, solidgiveaway.com. We've got a new item up for the contest. It is an AJ Brown signed Ole Miss mini helmet. Solidgiveaway.com. Whoa. Few quick and easy steps. That's all you need to go through to get your name in the hat. Oh, lest I forget, this show, all of our shows, driven by our good friends over at Geico.
Yes.
We appreciate their support, Dan. All right. With all that out of the way, do you just want me to dive into my questions?
I don't know. Is there any news you want to discuss? Adidas is apparently opening up the NIL coffers. Did you see that?
I saw the headline. What does that mean for us as college football fans?
That means Adidas schools will have opportunities with their athletes across various sports to become essentially Adidas influencers. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the bigger athletes with the bigger social followings, with the bigger public awareness, Q ratings will be front and center. But nonetheless, Adidas, huge company, and going to proverbial bat for Adidas schools. So that was a reality I think we're all prepared for. I know Nike has already jumped into things, especially with Oregon and NIL and set up, I think it's called Division Street, which provides NIL opportunities. So sort of par for the course. I think we're going to see more companies jumping through it. I saw, you know, the St. Peter's, some guard for St. Peter's, I think, has a Buffalo Wild Wings deal after they upset Kentucky, which is really, like, to me, the spirit of things with NIL, where, you know, all athletes that, you know, have a certain degree of visibility should be able to capitalize on that, but especially ones that sort of become overnight names that are able to capitalize on moments, on becoming sensations. And so, you know, seems like a big win, and I'm sure we're going to get into it with some of your questions, but Adidas officially jumping into the fold.
I saw that Nico, I'm not even going to try the last name.
Yamaleva? Something like that, yeah.
It looks like I am a leaving, and indeed, he did. Spurning
Oregon,
the
West Coast. Yep.
Spurning some other programs that were associated with his recruitment.
Miami. Yep.
And decides to go to Tennessee. Now, there was some scuttlebutt about the trust, whatever we're calling that, the trust. The
collective.
The collective, the $8 million potential.
Sure.
For Nico. Then unnamed Nico, I guess still unnamed Nico, but we all know it's him.
Right.
Regardless of all that, a pretty big get for Josh Heupel.
Huge. Humongous for Tennessee, and I assume, you know, the hope is to build around him with offensive linemen and receivers who are seeing the explosivity of Josh Heupel's system, you know, sending receivers deep, really going for it, playing with pace. It's an exciting brand of football for sure, and that was just year one last year with a transfer quarterback in Hendon Hooker. So, yeah, it's obvious that there is an interesting ceiling for Tennessee. The NIL stuff, I'm not going to pretend like I understand the intricacies of the deal he signed. I'm sure that $8 million figure is a best case scenario.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know if that's a market setting figure. I don't know how that figures to affect a big defensive tackle or a big corner or a big receiver or other SEC schools, SEC East schools. It's going to be all over the place. But that is an interesting parameter to the market for a five-star quarterback, of which there are a couple of other big ones. Malachi Nelson's committed to USC, and Arch Manning is the other big fish, and he remains uncommitted. And I think of what Georgia, Alabama, Texas appear to be the big players as of the time of recording in his recruitment. I won't pretend like I am fully up to date on the class of 2023, but in terms of where the market is, it's fascinating. It'll correct itself. Maybe it's low. Who knows? Maybe Nico will be a Heisman caliber quarterback, and he'll prove to be more of a $15 million type quarterback with how much he brings in and how much better recruiting classes are, with how much he gets Tennessee boosters excited about donating to the school and more enrollment into the school. There's all sorts of, you know, different tentacles to a successful football team within a university. So hoping for the best for him. Disappointed as an Oregon fan, and maybe we'll get into Oregon a little bit later on, but disappointed as an Oregon fan. And I can tell you this, as a Duck fan, I could very easily say, psh, what has college football come to? Oregon lost out on a West Coast quarterback because of booster money. But if Oregon had secured him, my reaction would have been like, psh, It's college football in 2022. Get with the program, everybody.
Get with the program. Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I am nothing if not a fan of high-level college football. Hopefully that comes across. And a strong Tennessee would be a fun thing to watch, given the style that they're going to be playing with.
Two other items very quickly that I think warrant mentioning. I don't think we've discussed either.
Yeah.
Ulysses Bentley.
Oh, yeah. Where did he end up?
He's going to Ole Miss.
Yeah.
He's going to Ole Miss. So in case you haven't been paying attention, Lane Kiffin has put together a nice little roster of transfers.
Yeah, Portal King.
He's been the Portal King. First, it was Jackson Dart and Zach Evans. Now adding Ulysses Bentley the fourth to the equation.
Yeah.
Is pretty damn interesting. Certainly, they've got options in the backfield now. And
yeah.
Just infinitely curious to see how Lane uses both those guys. It'll be very interesting.
Yeah, and the big story with Ole Miss last year was the direction the defense is heading in, because for all of the points Ole Miss can and will certainly always score, given the talent on offense and on the offensive coaching staff, they don't want to be playing that Arkansas game every week. They don't want to be playing 53-52 every week. And so it's terrific that these guys are coming in, because there's every reason to, given how you'll be featured in that offense as a running back, as a receiver, quarterback, whatever. But yeah, it's the curiosity about the defense. They lose DJ Durkin, right? He goes over to Texas A&M. So, no, it'll be fascinating, because Lane Kiffin is somebody who will stay current with how to acquire players, how to build rosters. He is not going to follow the Dabo model of this is the way I do things and this is how I'm going to do things moving forward, even though Dabo has now talked about more flexibility in terms of roster construction.
And last but certainly not least, Emory Jones going to the portal.
Saw that, yeah.
It originally looked as if he were going to stay. Billy Napier encouraged him to stay, but ultimately Emory Jones decides he wants to go, quote, to a stable place that will welcome me, is excited to have me there, and the right situation and fit. He told that to ESPN in a phone interview this past weekend. Speculation has been that ASU could be a landing spot for him, if only because there was a sudden following of Emory Jones on social media by some at ASU. There were some other schools that also followed suit. I think Rice and Arkansas State, North Texas, smaller programs by comparison to ASU. But Emory Jones is a kid who's played for Florida. Don't know if he's quite lived up to the hype that he brought with him when was originally flipped by Dan Mullen to come down to Gainesville, but nonetheless, still a name out there. You'd have to think if you're ASU, it's appealing. If only because they're so damn thin at quarterback, you'll take whatever you can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, Billy Napier had his own history at ASU, one of the places that helped to jumpstart his career. So interesting connection there. Also saw JT Daniels still out there. I think both Emory Jones and JT Daniels were in a similar situation where they wanted to graduate first. They had a limited number of credits left, and so they wanted to finish out the winter semester. So JT Daniels down to, at least the time of recording, West Virginia, Oregon State, and Mizzou. I don't know if you have that in front of you. All interesting fits, of course. Jonathan Smith has done a very good job with quarterbacks. West Virginia certainly in need of better quarterback play. I know they've got a freshman they're pretty high on, but in terms of experience and upside, JT Daniels certainly brings that. Mizzou, obviously losing Connor Bazelak to, I believe, Indiana. God, you got to keep track of a lot in 2022. But they themselves have intriguing, young, unproven quarterbacks of the future. So a year of JT Daniels postgraduate might not be the worst thing for Mizzou, especially with how they've been building things out on offense. They just landed, the number one or two receiver in the country in Luther Burden in this last class. So two pretty big names out there looking to certainly improve what a quarterback room looks like at a number of places.
All righty, Dan, shall we dive into questions?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Let's dive in. I dusted off that sound. I finally got my sounds ready to go here. I'm excited. Thank you.
Okay.
These are five questions that I've had on my mind that I've been wanting to ask you. I jotted them down.
Yeah.
But I haven't been able to. There's been a lot to talk about. There's a lot going on.
Sure.
So we're going to take this week. It's for us. It's our time, Dan. Question yep. number one. College football in Year of Our Lord 2022.
Yeah.
Would you agree that it feels a little bit different than it has in the past?
It feels uniquely different. Sure.
I was going to say, just agree with me. I'm going somewhere with this.
Yes, I'm with you. Yes, it feels different.
We have NIL. We have, we just read off news about the transfer portal. It's still going. We have coaching changes. Conference realignment felt like an eternity ago.
Yep. With
Texas and Oklahoma and then the Big 12. It's like a whole thing is going on out there. And you know what that means. You've been around the media game for quite some time. That means hot takes.
Yeah.
That means hot takes, oftentimes very bad opinions out there floating around the internet.
Yeah. And by the way, one thing you forgot is just the availability of games, that games are so much more available in a more complicated way sometimes with streaming.
Oh, yeah.
With announcers bouncing all over now, too. And so there's a lack of familiarity. And yeah. And that's affecting things in terms of realignment and TV deals. And yeah, it's all over the place that there is a certain amount of commercialization and millions upon millions, if not getting into the billions of dollars in the sport that, you know, it brings about opinions, let's say.
I want to know which popular opinion.
Yeah.
Which hot take that you, Dan Rubenstein, mostly believes is BS. Something that you're tired of hearing. It seems to have gone somewhat mainstream.
Right.
You're not buying it. You're not into it. And you can't answer the playoff. You can't answer the playoff because everybody knows where you stand on that.
Yeah. That's fine.
What do you think?
So you're asking me, given the state of things, people's hot takes are all over the place with college football, which hot take, and I'm a big proponent of naming names. I don't know if you have any names that you want to throw out who've issued takes. No, I don't necessarily have. I think there's a lot of smart people who are, again, I don't have the names. I wish I did. I'm a fan of naming names. But there appears to be a sentiment. There appears to be a sentiment of college football is not ruined. Like, I'm going to zag with this, right? Okay. There's like a fan sentiment that all of this NIL and transfer portal is ruining college football. And then there's pushback from writers that it's essentially, this everybody always cries wolf. Everybody always says something's going to ruin college football, but college football has always been changing. College football always has new quirks and wrinkles and movement across the sport, and you're still going to watch. My pushback is the fear of fans is warranted. So this is sort of a backlash to the backlash. I don't even know what I'm doing right here. I'm saying, I think we should be taking, not the people who are crying wolf, not the people who are saying the sport is being ruined. What I'm saying is there are people for which NIL, for which the over-commercialization, for which the transfer portal with players moving all over the place, coaches moving all over the place, that this is a tipping point for some people. I still think they're going to watch. People who are turned off by the realities of college football, I think there are going to be people, a not insignificant percentage of people. Also, you could add in like the dominance by, you know, a very small select group within the sport. That brings about hot takes. Not even necessarily with the playoff. Just be like, college football is sort of the same thing every year, right? It's Alabama against who? LSU against Clemson, against Ohio State, whatever. So people push back against that. I think fans who are raising these concerns about the changes being too dramatic to the sport, I think there's something to it. I don't think college football is bulletproof. I think football as a sport is in a pretty good place in terms of fan interest, but that's mostly because of the NFL. I don't care about TV ratings. I don't really care about attendance. There's all sorts of metrics that you can use. I'm saying it would be foolish to ignore people raising these concerns right now. And I think a lot of writers are ignoring these concerns. I think a lot of writers are saying, players have played for free and haven't been able to monetize and haven't been able to do this or that. Players haven't been had the freedom of movement. And whether right or wrong, I think people that are raising these concerns, fans of whatever team, fans of big teams, small teams, whatever, I think they should be listened to. I think there is something about the sport, and we've talked about this before, and I know I keep cutting you off as you begin to talk.
No, it's fine.
Something about the sport that has become regularly anti-fan, which I think is a problem. And I think the thing that we've talked about before is college football in 2005 was pretty difficult to follow. In 2022, you have to be dedicated to following the sport and the intricacies of movement, both of teams, coaches, players, what NIL deals mean or don't mean, and all of the legislation around the sport. You need to stay current with it or you will be left behind. And that's kind of an anti-mainstream fan sentiment, which I don't think is the healthiest thing for the sport. I don't know what it means. I just don't think college football is especially pro-fan.
It means you should go to solidverbal.com, click the subscribe link. We do two episodes per week all throughout the offseason, yada, yada, yada. Yeah.
Right.
I also don't think it's a binary choice.
No, it's not.
And I feel like oftentimes, I'll stick with you on this point. Oftentimes raising concerns unintentionally puts you on the side of being anti something.
Sure.
Right. Fans have concerns about NIL. Maybe you're an Akron fan. I don't know. We just mentioned Akron a few minutes ago.
Gojo Moorhead.
Maybe you're an Akron fan. And maybe NIL, all this stuff coming out, the transfer portal, that scares the crap out of you. Because not only can some of those players potentially be siphoned away from your program, lured by other programs in the area that might have some money to throw. But also, if you do get to the stage where you, let's say, develop a legitimate pro prospect at defensive end or running back or wide receiver or quarterback, now suddenly there's an immediate market elsewhere at a bigger place for their services.
Sure.
I understand that fan's perspective. I think, though, I think those concerns does not necessarily mean the fan is anti-change. It just means that they're got real concerns. And I hear it. So I don't like labeling folks as being anti when they bring up valid points. That said, I guess the counter argument would be there's so much money in this damn thing. We don't really care what you think. It's going to change whether you like it or not. And so that may also emphasize the second part of your point about college football becoming a little bit more anti-fan.
Right. Yeah. I just, and look, there is no college football. There is no entity making decisions. It's not the NCAA. It's not the college football playoff. It's just the idea of the sport as a whole has gotten further and further away from making it easy to consume. And so that's, again, solidverbal.com. Please do subscribe and follow and do whatever you need to do on your subscribe, your chosen subscription service. But I think there is that sentiment among writers, whether they work for ESPN or The Athletic or Sports Illustrated or whatever, that like players finally have a voice and they finally have the ability to make money and they finally have an ability to move around. I don't disagree with the upside of any of that. But again, it's not amazing for the sport as a whole to have year by year dramatic movement across the sport, because college football is the size of a professional sport but does not have similar contracts and representation as the NFL, as the NBA, as the NHL, as Major League Baseball. And so there is a structure, unfair as it may be to a lot of those sports, there is an understood structure to how and when players and not coaches, but players can move around. And so this is all so very new that a lot of writers, again, I whether it's Andy Staples or Nicole Auerbach or Ari Wassermer, any of these people, I don't know. But there is that sentiment that says, relax, you're still going to watch football. And I don't know if that's true.
No.
I don't know if that's overwhelmingly true, because people are kind of sick of trying and sick of being told the college football playoff or recruiting is the most important thing. And that their 9-3 season or the 7-5 season, they should just be happy with that and then see their star linebacker transfer to a bigger school and see their star quarterback transfer. Look, both of our schools have been the beneficiaries. Like both of our quarterbacks, our team's quarterbacks, were transfers from other schools. Oregon bigger than Boston College, of course, the biggest Oregon transfer quarterback in recent history came from Eastern Washington. But it's a reality that is not super appealing to the masses, to me, from what I can tell. And so don't know how you fix it, but that's the take of everything will be fine. You'll still watch football.
Right.
It's the meme. I don't know.
It's the meme of the dog in the burning house. Maybe not that drastic, but
right.
I think that's what you're pointing out. Yeah.
I think it's more important to listen to fans, reasonable, smart fans raising these concerns, than where we collectively, as people who cover the sport, do.
I will tell you, you know, just through the off season and through some of the stuff that I've been reading to keep myself current on college football, the one point that I think is emphasized and re-emphasized, and if ever there were any doubt, you shouldn't, because college football is just built a little bit differently.
Right.
But the power of the rivalry in college football.
Yeah.
The power of the rivalry in college football is still the engine that makes this whole thing go.
Sure.
And, you know, whether it's the Texas and Texas A&M thing, or Pitt and Penn State, or, you know, I don't know. There are plenty of rivalries that have fallen by the wayside over the years. You know, I hope whatever we do, that that is committed to memory, because we can't lose that. We just can't lose that aspect of college football. It really is what makes it unique and special.
It's even the second tier rivalries too, right? It's there's a shared history between Mississippi State and Florida, between Oregon and Washington State, between Michigan State, Penn State, which is the Land Grant Trophy. That is a true rivalry game, sort of. There is that like even Notre Dame, Stanford, when Stanford's good, there's that shared history of like, oh man, remember that game 3 years ago? That was wild. Remember Christian McCaffrey went wild running? Like, there is something about even those second tier rivalries that we lose.
I'm with you 100% on that. And you know, I'm pro playoff, but I will say, you know, that is the guts of college football. That is what makes this special. Any fan who tells you differently doesn't know what they're talking about. The rivalries are ultimately what power this thing. So, all right.
Yeah.
Let's get to question numero dos.
Let's do it.
You got into this business on your own free will, Dan.
That's true. Happily.
You sent out tapes. You hustled. You eventually became the SI tour guy.
Mm-hmm.
SI being Sports Illustrated.
2007, 8, 9, and I did it independently in 2006. Yeah.
We went around to a bunch of different college football stadiums. It wasn't just college football. You did other events too, but you know, college football was really where it started for you. And you had the privilege of going to a bunch of the preeminent college football cathedrals, let's say.
True.
Around our great nation. So much talk on this show, on many other shows, is what's the best stadium you've ever been to? What's the coolest game day environment? Oh, it's the Grove. It's State College. What's the worst game day experience?
Just bathing in the jacuzzi of negativity here, Ty, huh?
You've had a 2-month sinus infection at this point.
That's true.
We went a little darker. We're trying to vibe with you. Just work with me.
Okay, so I'll say this. When you say stadium, you want to say in-game? Like within the stadium or the overall experience, because the SI Tour Guy show was built around tailgating and culture around game day, not just how it is inside of a stadium.
You can answer this however you want.
Okay.
However you want. I'll take either or both.
Okay. So there are a number of factors here, right? There's like, how fun was it to tailgate? How fun was it to spend time in this college town, which I didn't get to do all the time, because there are certain, like even South Bend, like, flew, because I was living in LA, flew into Chicago, drove to South Bend for the game, drove back to Chicago. And so I didn't stay overnight in South Bend, and I didn't stay overnight in a lot of places just because of flying and travel convenience. The most inconvenient travel to get to a game is clear to me, and that's Penn State. Penn State was the absolute worst place to get to from Los Angeles, because basically I didn't want to take connecting flights, so I had to fly to Pittsburgh or Philly, flew to Pittsburgh, and drove the most miserable stretch of a state I've ever driven. And this is nothing to do with the people of Western PA or Central PA or what the cities, the towns, whatever. It's just dark and miserable and not wide lane. Like, it's just a miserable travel experience to drive to and from I guess from Pittsburgh to State College and back. That was awful. Beaver Stadium was quite fun. There was a wide variety of personality outside. Like, I don't know if you tailgate on like cow pastures. I don't know what that situation is in State College, but State College probably had, or that specific tailgate probably had, the widest variance in these people are awesome and these people are terrible and I want to get away from them. And the only other place that I had that sort of dramatic variance in fans, where I was like, these people are great, I'm so glad I came across them tailgating, and I need to get away from these humans as quickly as humanly possible, was Tennessee.
Really?
Now, I went to a Tennessee-Florida game, and I got to go to Neyland, and I was on the field, and I got to see, you know, I think it was a checkerboard game of some kind. It was incredible. The experience inside Beaver Stadium at Penn State and the experience inside Neyland were both terrific. But those were the places with the widest variance of fans where I'm like, these people are horrific and I want to get away. I assume you can empathize a little bit with that because Penn State's an enormous school. So of course you're going to get people that rub you that way, right?
Well, it's sort of a perfect cross section between Philly fans and Pittsburgh fans. There's a pretty heavy New York influence as well.
I was going to say New York, New Jersey, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's understandable, to say the least.
But that's more travel and fans. There are places that I was definitely surprised by how much I like the stadium experience. Like I went into it probably too negatively. Like I had a really good time at Iowa and Iowa City. The tailgate wasn't anything special. I'll tell you the two most disappointing places, and the context is important here. The two most disappointing places were probably Clemson and West Virginia. I had a great time in the tailgates at Clemson and West Virginia, but the games themselves, I had heard so much about Death Valley and they're running, the rubbing Howard's Rock and running down the hill and all that stuff. Clemson, I want to say 2008, and this may have just been the tail end of Tommy Bowden, or he was already fired and Dabo was the interim. They played Maryland, maybe Danny O'Brien Maryland in 2008, and it was just not a great game. It was an early kickoff, and it was just, the energy was not all that great. And Clemson's not an especially easy place to get to from LA, but that's a me thing. That doesn't matter for Clemson as a whole. But this was Clemson before it was Clemson. I didn't have an amazing time. Really liked hanging out in the town of Clemson in the tailgate. And West Virginia was another early kick. Had a great time with Mountaineer fans. Drank like moonshine at 9:44 a.m. or something like that. It was a Big East game against Rutgers. And this is probably 08. So I think Pat White was still there. Pat McAfee was still there. And it was like a very ho-hum, like 24-17, 27-17 game. And it was early. The crowd wasn't especially into it. I almost fell asleep in the press box. Again, a me thing. But I came away... Look, if I had gone to that, the Honey Badger LSU West Virginia game, that was like a yellow out, if you remember.
Yep.
I would have had a stellar time at West Virginia. This was just the choice of game I went to. So this is more on me than it is on West Virginia or more on Clemson. But those were two memories where I'm like, early kick, not a lot of energy, not a lot of juice. I don't know, not into it. Every school has them. Those are the games that I happen to go to. At Penn State, I went to a big game. That was a Notre Dame Jimmy Clausen game.
That was when I emailed you. That was how we met.
Correct. And then the Tennessee game was a Florida game. It was a Tebow game. So there was a lot of energy, a lot of juice in those stadiums. But that was the fan variance. Texas A&M was actually a little bit disappointing, but it was another one of those matchups. But Texas A&M had Chick-fil-A in the press box. That goes a long way. But again, I didn't spend that much time in College Station. I flew in and out of Houston. Oregon State didn't do a lot for me. It was a fun game because I got to go see an Oregon State game. Platypus Cup, win the Platy. But Corvallis, fine. But, didn't. I stayed out like in the Salem area, so I didn't really spend that much time in Corvallis. But yeah, there are just some places out there. Like, you go to the Rose Bowl, there's not much juice in the Rose Bowl for an average UCLA game. To me it was... There were definitely places where the games weren't that big, but you could tell this was a fully dedicated operation by the fan base, by the school, blowing it out. Like LSU, it was LSU South Carolina. It was an inconsequential game. It was rainy. It was an incredible experience. And so there were places like that. Washington had that. Washington was very energetic and a place that I suggest a lot of people try and get to if you're hopping around the country going to college football games. I think the best, I went to a big Ohio State game, which was very fun at the Shoe. I think it was Ohio State, Penn State, even though it was pretty low scoring. That was great. It was just a great time. I, I, in the Big Ten, I would just suggest that people go to Camp Randall when you ask me. I'm going to try to end this on a more positive note. But yeah, there are those sort of juiceless places, but I'm sure it has more to do with my selection of game than the place itself.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Next question, Dan.
All right. Was that an acceptable answer to you?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course. It's our damn show.
Okay.
Do whatever we want.
It's your questions, Oregon, though. I want to make sure I hit them.
Oregon is 76th in Bill Connolly's returning production index. Now,
yeah,
it doesn't mean everything, but it's a guide. I think it is especially important to note Oregon because not only are they losing a lot, offense especially, but they also lost Mario Cristobal, who goes to Miami, and they're employing a first-time head coach in Dan Lanning, who doesn't really have a ton of familiarity with the Pacific Northwest.
West Coast, Pac-12, you're correct. Yeah, he was at ASU briefly when he was very young, but that's it. Yeah.
So you take all those factors into consideration. I think you also got to factor in a schedule that to me looks kind of tricky.
Sure.
Not the least of which is Labor Day weekend when they're...
Wait, does it? I feel like I'm looking
well,
at...
Well, it's not...
I'll
if
load
you take
up the
a
schedule,
look at
but yeah.
It, if you take a look at it, it is certainly not the hardest schedule that they could play, but I think that first month of action will be very trying.
Sure. Of course.
Because anytime you open up with Georgia, they got a BYU team that brings a lot back. BYU should be pretty good again.
Yeah, Eastern Washington.
They've got a game later in the year, I believe, against Utah that's at home. But it's like you could find landmines on that schedule. So I have to ask the question here. In your mind, I don't know how closely you've paid attention to it. It is late March. Based on what you know now, what is the range of possible outcomes for this Oregon team going into next season? And furthermore, which of those outcomes or which possible thing that could happen would actually leave you concerned about Dan Lanning and whether he can do the job at Oregon?
There's very little that he could or couldn't do in year one that will have me worried unless there is a locker room abandonment issue, that he is not the grown-up in the room and it's becoming clear right away. That to me would be the only thing in year one. Be like, oh man, he can't handle coaching a major program as a head coach. The variety of outcomes hinges on what I assume to be Bo Nix and whatever the ratio of good Bo to bad Bo is. I don't know what it was at Auburn. Auburn fans can certainly weigh in that it was like a 40-60 experience, a 30-70 experience. Certainly with the way he finished his career there. You know, the Texas A&M game, he made some plays, but they didn't score a touchdown. They didn't get into the end zone. So that was arguably his worst statistical performance of his career. And it was his second to last game, his penultimate game at Auburn. But three of those four games, how he finishes Auburn career, were pretty promising. The Ole Miss game, the Arkansas game, and at least the first half of that Mississippi State game. So if Oregon gets 70-30 good Bo to bad Bo, That's an outcome in which Oregon, with a very experienced offensive line, promising receivers, a good but thin running back room, Byron Cardwell is the new full-time guy with Travis Dye moving to USC and CJ Verdell entering the draft. Defensively, the line's in a decent place. Linebacker has those 2 5 stars. Secondary is a little bit thin, but they brought in at least a transfer at corner. They were hit by the portal a little bit. They lost a key corner, a rotation defensive lineman. They lost guys in the portal.
Yeah.
The big thing to me is going to be, I think the schedule is fantastic. The Georgia game, who cares? Whatever. It's game one. It's on the road. It's playing in Atlanta. But their road games within the Pac-12, at Wazoo, new full-time head coach and Jake Dickert, at Arizona, which still has a long ways to go, but improving, at Cal, which has not had an offense and has not really been anything beyond a vague bowl threat, at Colorado, which is trending in the wrong direction, and at Oregon State, which is feisty, but shouldn't be deep enough or talented enough to beat Oregon. Now, they do have Utah and Washington in, it looks like, consecutive weeks. They have UCLA after a bye week, but that's in, it's in Eugene. I don't know. I think the schedule's fine.
It's a good home schedule. It's a good home schedule.
It's a really good road-home split.
You know, you could definitely make the case that Utah is going to be loaded again. They'll be decent. Right. Maybe UCLA gets better. I don't know.
Right.
I think Stanford has to get better. You would think they have to get better. I don't know.
Right.
So, you know, as we've seen time and again with some of these Pac-12 schedules, sometimes it's the games you don't know. The games that don't jump out at you in March that are the ones that end up taking you down.
The problem for me with Oregon, and I think there is a lot of upside because I still think they're more talented than anybody on their schedule. So that's a good place to start on their Pac-12 schedule, excuse me, not more talented than Georgia. First time head coach, first time full play calling offensive coordinator, and quarterback transfer, which we used the word cocktail last episode about rivalry games and, you know, the spiciest, most balanced cocktails. It doesn't feel like an especially promising cocktail because there's so much unknown. What is the vision Dan Lanning has for his offense? What is the vision Kenny Dillingham has for his offense after spending time with both Gus Malzahn and Mike Norvell? And I am just never a huge fan in having to talk yourself into a QB. Now, there have been guys who have gone from fine to really good or afterthought to surprisingly good after 2-3 years of playing or being a backup and not being able to crack a starting lineup. You look at like what Will Levis did at Kentucky. He transfers to Kentucky. They need a quarterback post Terry Wilson. Expectations, the bar wasn't set particularly high with Terry Wilson. I think it was Eddie Gran was the offensive coordinator at Kentucky. They just sort of handed the ball off a lot. And Liam Conan, Will Levis, fully and completely soared past all expectations last year.
Kentucky went 10-3. Will Levis said,
like, you could not have imagined Will Levis would have
two-thirds
been
of his passes. I think it was 66%.
Right.
His completion
percentage.
And,
you know, Wandale Robinson comes in. Like, that was a surprise that you had to talk yourself into Will Levis and Liam Cohen succeeding together, and they exceeded expectations. And that happens. Like, I would imagine Pitt fans were fine with Kenny Pickett heading into last year. Like, he's experienced. He's a calming influence. He knows the system. He's comfortable in the ACC. He's one of the better quarterbacks in the ACC. Completely exceeds expectations last year, right? So there are those situations. The problem is those seem to be exceptions to the rule. When you have to talk yourself into quarterback of like, oh, well, maybe it's a fresh start. Oh, well, maybe he looks like he did at the end of his career. Oh, well, maybe he just needs the, you know, the lack of pressure
in that
from
voice
Auburn.
Too. The voice is
in that voice specifically.
Important. Yeah.
That's a problem to me. If you're talking yourself into a quarterback with his known flaws and what they're up against in terms of the unknown, I don't know. I think the best case scenario for Oregon is they lose to Georgia and they lose to Utah and they're able to sneak out the rest of their schedule and go 10-2 because Bo Nix has decent enough command and he's not the reason they lose games, not necessarily the reason they win games, but he does enough to so that every Oregon fan and every college football fan watches their games and says he's pretty solid.
10-2 would be a revelation
be a huge win.
Year one, right?
I think the Pac-12 is in a place right now. And I'm terribly concerned about the quarterback room moving forward. The thing that would actually concern me, you asked about what would be concerning about Dan Lanning in year one. What does he do at quarterback for the future? Mm. Right now, Oregon has three former blue chip quarterbacks in that room, Bo Nix, Jay Butterfield, and Ty Thompson. You would be hard-pressed to find an Oregon fan confident in the position moving forward. Now, Oregon's major target in this current recruiting cycle, as we mentioned, is going to Tennessee. At least that's what we figure is going to happen. He's going to end up at Tennessee. There are other interesting quarterback prospects on the West Coast. I don't follow it particularly closely. If Dan Lanning fully strikes out in terms of bringing in an interesting high-ceiling type quarterback in this class and has to depend on the portal once again, I mean, who do we suspect is going to be out there? We could talk about, you know, Miller Moss and Hudson Card and all these guys that are, you know, former blue chip guys who are sitting on the bench. But if he's not able to secure a quarterback of the future in this class, I wouldn't be concerned, but I'd file it away thinking, because I know you need time to build up those relationships as a head coach and your offensive coordinator, and nobody knows what Oregon's system is going to be. So that's more difficult for quarterbacks to know. Like, you have an idea of what Tommy Rees is going to do at Notre Dame with the new full-time head coach. You have an idea what Brian Kelly and Mike, what's his name? Who's the offensive coordinator for LSU?
Denbrock.
I was thinking DeBoard. Mike Denbrock. You have an idea. You know what Billy Napier is probably going to do-ish at Florida. Oregon's the mystery there. And so they have work to do in explaining and showing future quarterbacks what Oregon's offense is going to be. So that would be the concern to me in year one, that Dan Lanning does not lock in a promising quarterback of the future.
That was a very thoughtful answer, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you, Ty.
Thank you for sharing that with me. Let's move on.
And if you fast forwarded past all of my Oregon gibberish, welcome back.
Welcome back. Question four.
Yeah.
Going to begin the part of this episode where we start to take you a little bit out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
Rank your top five players in the upcoming NFL draft.
Define top five, like who I think should go one through five, or my five favorite players who are mocked to be first round-ish.
I don't think either you or I are qualified to actually do the mock draft thing.
No, definitely not.
So I'm not asking that question from that perspective. I am essentially saying yes. Of the guys who are projected to go highly in next month's draft,
sure,
give me your top five. Top five guys that you saw them in college, and like a lot of us are convinced every year when, you know, somebody drops a little to Patrick Mahomes or whoever. I mean, he didn't drop that far, but Aaron Rodgers, guys who we see in college, we know they're going to be good in the pros. You know, who kind of fits that bill as we go into the draft?
It's pretty straightforward to me. Both of the inside linebackers who are mocked to be first round guys, and maybe there are more than two, but Devin Lloyd and Nakobe Dean were absolute joys to watch as they destroyed the hopes and dreams of offenses that Utah and Georgia faced. Love Evan Neal. Love somebody that is that athletic at that size. I don't know if you saw what Evan Neal looks like with like just underwear on, just, you know, his combine picture.
Settle.
No, I'm telling you, like, physically there is something that is so terrifying about somebody who is, I don't know what his current measurement is, like, he's like
6'7" 337. I can tell you there is definitely a moment in time in the not too distant past where a 6'7" linebacker with his shirt off kind of looks like a blob.
You mean lineman?
Lineman, excuse me.
Yeah.
Evan Neal looks like you play in the NBA.
Yes.
I mean, he's ridiculous.
Yes. There is something so impressive about just being a big dude and not being a fat dude with carrying all that weight. And that's 335 or whatever that he's down to from, I think, what he played at, which was close to like 360, I think, during the season. Aaron Donald was that way too. We're like, oh, he's 300 pounds. He's 290 pounds, whatever he is. It was like, he's 290 pounds of muscle, of good mass. And so guys like that are so impressive to me that they're able to perform athletically the way that they are and build themselves up to that point. So Evan Neal is there. Both of those linebackers are there. Drake London, I just feel so bad for. Drake London was completely and fully unstoppable, made essentially what amounted to a bad decision to go to USC because of how everything turned out at USC and was just not playing in consequential games for the most part. And so I just am hopeful for him that he's healthy and ends up somewhere where he can immediately impact winning, because I just feel bad because he was unstoppable. Everybody knew the ball was going to him. Didn't matter. Drake London. And probably Kayvon Thibodeau.
Okay.
Just because I'm a dumb Oregon homer. Kayvon Thibodeau was beat up for a good chunk of last year. Didn't even play in that Ohio State win. So I'm hopeful for him and for Oregon. And that's something that, you know, Oregon can recruit around, not just his success in college, but his success in getting drafted highly and going to the pros. Because Oregon has had, like, very quietly a good amount of success at defensive line in the draft recently with Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner. So I'm hopeful that Kayvon Thibodeau keeps that going. There's other guys I like. I'm not a huge fan of drafting running backs or receivers, generally speaking, right, in the first round. I think the focus should be on linemen, quarterback. I see a lot of people seem to love, you know, Mina Kimes loves Malik Willis and hopes that he ends up with the Seahawks. I hope it works out for him too. He just seems like a very fun player and hopefully has a good NFL career. I hope it, you know, Kenny Pickett and his tiny hands, I hope that works out for him.
I don't really like, in terms of draftability, for whatever it's worth coming from me, I don't really like any of the quarterbacks this year.
We got Matt Corral.
Yeah.
Sam Howell.
Nah, I'm good. If my team needs a quarterback, I say take something else. My team does need a quarterback desperately. We're stuck with Daniel Jones, I think, for at
so
least.
So you just want Jimmy Garoppolo? Is that what you're looking for?
No, just take linemen. It's a deep lineman draft. There are a lot of good linemen.
Yeah.
Take linemen.
It's a guy from Mississippi State, NC State.
Take defenders. Like, build from the lines out and actually build the team right. But don't, I don't know. I don't want any of these quarterbacks.
Who else are you going to miss other than Kyle Hamilton, who's projected to be like...
Kyle Hamilton is my answer. He might be my 1-3. I love me some Kyle Hamilton. some other names that I think jump out to me.
Yeah.
Just in kind of going through this exercise.
Who are you going to miss? Who do you love?
Well, I mean, you mentioned Devin Lloyd and N'Kobe Dean.
Yep.
You kind of took those from me. I would also throw out as just like another name that I feel badly for. David Ojabo hurt his leg.
I saw that Michigan end opposite
Aiden
Hutchinson.
Which sucks, you know, that sucks. So
bad, like it's Achilles, something super serious, right?
Yeah. Super serious, although they're saying a 6-month recovery, which apparently they can do that now in 6 months.
Yeah.
But David Ojabo, I think, is a name that, I want to succeed. Aiden Hutchinson, I don't know if you mentioned him, but Aiden Hutchinson with the impact that he had, maybe not so much in the playoffs, but certainly throughout the course of the season and his college career at Michigan, is another guy that's really easy to root for.
Yeah.
As is George Karlaftis. George Karlaftis, like, sort of came out of nowhere in a sense and was very dominant.
Yeah. I think he was hurt his sophomore year, I want to say, and bounced back in a big way. Yeah.
He bounced back
similar
in a big way, Dan.
Yeah.
But it's not like there was a ton of preseason steam on George Karlaftis the way there was on Kayvon Thibodeau.
Right.
Right.
Totally.
The season that he had definitely opened some eyes. So, yeah, I'd probably throw those three guys out there, Hutchinson, Karlaftis, Ojabo, in addition to Hamilton. And if I'm going to throw one other guy on there, I'll go to corner.
That was going to be my bonus, Jonas. Continue.
I know everybody's in on Sauce Gardner.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
And
I
get that. He's got great size. He's super as a cover corner.
Remember when Notre Dame decided to throw it at him? That was fun.
No, I do. I was going to say Derek Stingley, though, and he's a guy who also was battling injury. He's a guy who I remember when he came out of high school, many folks in the recruiting world were saying, much like they did with Adrian Peterson, if he wanted to go pro now, somebody would take him and he could probably play at that level. So, been a bit of a mixed bag at LSU. No one doubts the talent, but I'm curious to see what he can do at the next level and I'm rooting for him. So with your five off the board, those are my next five.
Done.
All right. Final football question. Daniel.
Hit me.
What is your analysis of the purported Joe Buck for the Penn State-Purdue game trade that went down, apparently between ESPN and Purdue? So, like, there's
ESPN
a whole...
ESPN and Fox.
ESPN and Fox. What did I say?
Yeah, Purdue.
No.
Like,
definitely different. ESPN and Fox. In case you have not been keeping yourself up to date with what's going on in the sports media world, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman leaving Fox, going over to ESPN to do Monday Night Football. Big deal in sports media circles. But as part of that move to bring Joe Buck over to ESPN from Fox, it's been reported that there was a trade.
mm-hmm.
that there was a trade. This requires some understanding of how games get allotted and how games get assigned out to different networks throughout the course of a given week. I'm not going to go into all of that.
There's a draft, I believe.
It's a draft. Yeah, it's a it's a whole thing. Kind of cool. I didn't know about it until I read about this, but it's like a whole thing that they built in so that the networks can pick off the games that make sense to them.
Yeah.
But as part of that, apparently the game that was traded to Fox from ESPN as part of this Joe Buck acquisition, I guess we can say, was Penn State Purdue. What do you think?
I think I would watch it regardless.
Joe Buck or the game?
The game. So Aiden O'Connell's back, right?
He's back.
For Purdue. Aiden O'Connell. So he went to the same high school as Jody with an I. So I've got a soft spot there. He's throwing, his receiving room is not going to be as good this year without David Bell.
They've also got Brady Allen, who they're bringing in.
I am thinking for the money, ESPN probably got the better of the deal because Monday Night Football is such a good cornerstone franchise, broadcast franchise. But I guess I'm happy for Fox that they got Penn State Purdue. I don't know. Like it just kind of seems like given where these teams are right now, it's kind of like a B game. Like this was not a, because the original rumor was what? Penn State, Ohio State, something like that?
No, Notre Dame, Ohio State.
Notre Dame, Ohio State, rumor. Right, to open up the year. And that, I think Burke Magnus, who runs things for ESPN, came out and denied that specific story. Was Al Michaels not traded at a certain point? Oswald the Rabbit?
Oh gosh, I don't even
During his Disney, because he was at ABC and then went to NBC. And so this is not the first trade that, asset to be named later. So Oswald the Rabbit, I think, was an original property of Disney that perhaps I think Universal had ownership over and Disney wanted him back. So Oswald the Rabbit is now back in the Disney archive. I believe I got that story right. I like it. The fascinating thing to me is, just more broadly speaking with the broadcast movement, is Thursday night is now Amazon, correct?
Correct.
Thursday night NFL is now Amazon. The college tie-in is Kirk Herbstreit is calling that game with Al Michaels, right?
Was Al Michaels announced as the...
I believe so. Yeah, I think Kirk Herbstreit tweeted it out or Instagrammed it out that Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit will be calling the Thursday night Amazon game, which I think is being produced by NBC. So I think Al Michaels is still going to work with his familiar NBC crew, but has left NBC and is not doing Sunday Night Football
anymore. And they're
probably
paying him more, I'm assuming.
They're probably paying him a pretty penny.
Yeah.
So Kirk Herbstreit now will be doing what? Thursday Night Football, game day, and Saturday Night Football? That's a haul.
Yeah.
That's, and announcers, and like our pal Adam Amin has been calling multiple sports multiple days. And like, this is not a new thing. But to do a 3-4 hour live show on Saturday morning after a turnaround on Friday doing the Thursday night game, different sport, and then traveling again potentially Saturday afternoon to call the night game, that's a lot. So we have Joe Buck and Troy Aikman to Monday Night Football ESPN, Kirk Herbstreit to Amazon in addition to his ESPN responsibilities. I don't know what's going to happen with the Fox guys, because now you're going to have openings at Fox. Like, is Joe Davis going to now do NFL games? Is Gus Johnson going to do NFL games? Are they doubling up college and NFL?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Those are the two big names doing college.
It'll be very interesting to see. I'm sort of hung up on the trading of assets in different universes.
Okay.
I love that possibility.
Okay. So let me take it to you and make it personal.
Please.
If ESPN came to me and said, we are throwing $1 million at you to spearhead a new college football podcast, you have to leave the Solid Verbal.
Don't give them any ideas.
But, well, I'm letting you
know
them,
they listen to this.
I know.
They take our stuff.
What would commiserate value be for me if ESPN went to you and said, we understand, we fully kneecap the Solid Verbal, the tandem that is Ty and Dan.
Right.
How can we make this right from an asset perspective? Because we know the Solid Verbal is under contract with whoever.
Well, I mean, what, for starters.
So you have ESPN, you have Disney, you have ABC, you have all the properties within that umbrella.
For starters, I need the NFT of the original ESPN2 logo, because I don't know what they did with that thing, but that lives in infamy. I love that.
Yeah, the scratchy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's got a street feel to it. I need that. So I need that. However they can signify that I have ownership of the mark.
Well, think about specific things. Yeah. Think about like the ESPN things, the physical things that are meaningful to you. Like you mentioned ESPN2. Would you want like Carl Ravitch's leather jacket when they were trying to make ESPN2 cool? Or like Susie Colbert's? Like remember they had him dressed down? I don't know if it was Keith Olbermann, somebody. Like what are the physical ESPN or Disney, or I guess ABC, if a TV show is produced by ABC. Like would you want the Tool Time set in your house?
Wow.
That was an ABC show.
No. Yeah.
Would you want a display case of like Urkel's glasses?
There really is an open playbook here in terms of things that you could ask for. The broader question is, what are you worth?
That's what I'm saying.
You know, how...
So it would have to be worth it to ESPN.
How aggressive could we get this? I mean, could we get the rights to Family Matters?
It's not we.
At this point,
it's now just you.
Could Solid Verbal Media?
Could like, we do you want to syndicate rights? Family Matters on whatever
could we
platform?
Could we get the rights to that?
Nah, that's probably too much.
Step by step. Little Suzanne Summers. Could we do that?
Okay, so I don't think you could get Step by Step. I don't think you get Family Matters, but...
Boy Meets World. What about Boy Meets World?
No.
Too much?
BMW is too much. Could you have a negotiation about hanging with Mr. Cooper? I think that becomes interesting.
Wow.
Like B-level TGIF.
Yeah.
What are the other pieces of ESPN memorabilia? Is it like old X Game stuff? Like, do you want Mike Patrick and his audio archive? Do you want, like, I'm trying to think of, like, other ESPN physical things that would be meaningful to you as a token in your home? Like, would you want Keith Jackson's yellow ABC jacket?
See, I'm not big on the memorabilia thing.
Okay.
But I tell you what I wouldn't mind having. I wouldn't mind having exclusive ownership of all the ESPN commercials they've done over the years.
Oh, that's good. But what would you do with it?
I don't know. Maybe I'd resell it on the internet and make money off it. But
all right,
you know, the Y2K with Charlie Steiner.
How about this?
It's never iffy if it's Griffey with Kenny Mayne.
What if ESPN agreed to cast you in one of those commercials? Like, and you got to choose any past or present ESPN personality and team. You know,
no, they're kneecapping mascot. Me. They're kneecapping me.
You get to appear in the commercial.
I quit my job for this.
I know, that's true.
So if they're taking you away, they're ending the business. We're done. It's done. I don't have the Dunzo sound, but we're done.
Right.
So you got to make it worth my while.
Is there anybody at ESPN or ABC/Disney that you would replace me with? That would just be a swap?
See, now that's interesting.
A clean swap. So they just hired Pete Thamel. We don't really know Pete.
I don't know Pete.
Yeah. You got Bill Connolly, ESPN.
Bill Connolly's an interesting pull.
I don't think he's bringing Rubenstein energy, though.
It's different.
You have all the people on air.
Right.
All the people that call college games. Like, do you think you could replace me with a Anish Shroff? A Dave Pasch? Do you think you would do the show with Bill Walton?
I think Bill Walton would do the show with Bill Walton. I don't think there's not enough microphones for that one.
You could go outside of football and hire somebody calling. You want to do the show with A-Rod?
No. No, I don't. If we could somehow incorporate the Jack Fowler scale.
Sure.
If we could somehow incorporate Fowler into this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's probably... I don't mean to be derogatory towards you.
Uh-oh.
I don't think you'll take it as such. But Fowler's got more value than you. So
could I get
him on a limited basis to be part of the content of the show?
Recurring, like a recurring guest star.
Kind of like we had with Bill C.
Sure.
Like, could I bring him on for a Patreon show? People would pay for that. Fitness tips with Chris. People would pay for fitness tips with Chris. You've seen his biceps on Instagram. You know what that's all about.
Sure.
This is a very complex question. I did not expect you to turn it around on me.
Oh, man.
I will be putting together a list of demands, and like a good athletic director, I will keep it in my top drawer in the event that something cataclysmic like this were to occur.
What if it was like a demand that every opening day you get to watch every single baseball game with Tim Kirkjian?
I mean, I like Tim Kirkjian, but again, you're nuking my business. No.
I know. No, I know. I'm just trying to come up with something appealing to you as a human.
All right. I have two other questions written down here. We're going to do one. Do you want me to do the bug one or the sleep deprivation one?
Sleep deprivation.
Dan Rubenstein.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the wrong button.
No, that's great. Leave that in there.
I'll leave it in. They'll both stay in. Yeah. What is the latest you have voluntarily stayed awake?
Yeah.
In the last 12 months?
Well, I've had an infant.
Voluntarily stayed up.
So that was not my choice. That was because I had
because you had to like sustain life. Old. Yes.
Right. From my teat. The latest I have probably stayed up has probably been no later than 12:30 a.m.
Did you see the ball drop on New Year's Eve?
No, of course, but I never do that. I was probably watching a movie I got hooked on like Drive to Survive or some show that I just wanted to keep watching. There are times because I played tennis on Thursday nights. And I don't know if you ever did this when you were, because you played softball, but I don't know if you ever did like a more rigorous like sport or physical activity.
How dare you?
Yeah, yeah. I went there. When you're done playing, you're still juiced up.
Yeah.
I don't know if like, I remember talking to my dad about this when he would like play poker until like 10, 11 at night with a bunch of buddies, but he like was thinking about all of his hands and he still had a lot of energy from playing. So he would be up till 1, 2 a.m.
It's not that different than when you watch a really high level college football game that runs deep into the night and you're into it. And it just takes, after the national championship, we were pretty jazzed up. We were juiced up.
How late did we stay up that night? That was one of my later nights. That was close to midnight.
That was past 12:30. That was past 12:30.
That was Eastern. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm in God's time zone now. Yeah. Somewhere in that realm, that 12:30 realm, I just don't have it in me. Like even those late games, the Pac-12 games, I get up early and watch them in the morning that I miss. There's no Pac-12 game. And I'm pretty good now because I have the YouTube TV. I'm pretty good now. I'll just, you know, throw it to the cloud DVR. I'll avoid my phone. I'll charge it in another room. I'll avoid, even if it's an Oregon game, I'll just get up at 5 and, you know, skim through it then. Hmm. So now I don't have it. I'm trying to think. I don't think, and I know it's not a fantastic answer. What the latest you've stayed up is what?
I've been up very late in the
doing
last
what?
Year. Nothing in particular, but I've been up till 3, 4.
What are you doing at 2:44 a.m.?
Going down a YouTube rabbit hole.
Sure.
Clicking around on the computer, playing around on the phone.
Yep.
Nothing exciting.
Are you doing that in bed? Or are you doing that in the living room?
Mostly in the living room, I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly in the living room. But nothing exciting. I mean, come on. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And you can function after 2-3 hours of sleep?
No. No, no. See, when I was working the mysterious day job.
Yeah.
And I was up and down and just unable to sleep through the night because of stress and the crushing weight of the job. I was not depressed.
You can listen to it in full detail.
RobBallers.com. RobBallers.com. You know, I was getting sleep, just not in any kind of continuous fashion. And you had to function the next day, so you did it.
Right.
But no. Can I function? I only have 2 hours of sleep. Not really.
Are you watching anything now?
Any shows?
Yeah.
Solid Wife Kate watched Inventing Anna.
No, why are you dressed so poor? Yeah.
Yeah, she watched that. I didn't watch it. I just saw some of the interviews with the real Anna that Kate watched after the fact. And I've decided I'm not really interested in watching that show.
Okay. Fair.
So, yeah, I went back and I watched Jack Ryan season 1 again.
Again,
yeah.
Okay.
Second time. Season 1, good. Season 2, I'll get back to you. Season 2 left a little bit to be desired. So I watched that, was in a mood. I am waiting to get rolling on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
I'm current. It's good.
Latest season.
But the latest season only had 8 episodes, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm waiting to get caught up on that one. And then there are a couple others that have been sent to me. I watched Hacks. Did I tell you I watched Hacks?
Yeah, it's really good, right?
It was good. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but as for current stuff that I'm watching, sort of an open book. I really could go for something to fill that void of like a Jack Ryan type of show.
I'm dangerously close to rewatching Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Dangerously close.
Yeah.
And also, do you watch Better Call Saul?
No.
Did you do Breaking Bad?
I did Breaking Bad, yeah.
You have to do Better Call Saul. Better Call Saul is
I started
excellent.
It. I couldn't get into it.
You got to keep going. It's so good. The new season starts, I think, next month, Ty, and I'm jacked about it.
I'm jacked to the tits!
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is. Right. I've been saving that sound drop for quite some time.
Yeah, you pulled it out at the right time.
Thank you.
Good work.
That was just a little treat for people who have been paying attention this entire time.
God bless you.
Yeah, I stayed up late the other night, Friday night, I think, watching a couple of the newer South Park episodes. There was an episode about city people moving to South Park, and they only say like 7 words. People moving from the city and driving up real estate prices in South Park, in which Cartman becomes a real estate agent, South Park Realty Group. And all of the city folk, they come in and all they say is bottled water, MacBook Pro, Pilates, Tesla, bottled water, Tesla, Pilates, MacBook. It's pretty good. It's pretty great. As a city person currently moving to a suburb anyway, it was good. And I stayed up pretty late for me watching it.
All right.
Very boring.
Daniel, thank you for imparting some of your wisdom on us.
I try.
Always appreciated. We appreciate you out there in the Verballerhood downloading, listening, supporting the show. Hopefully you made it the full way through. We appreciate you hanging around if you have. SolidVerbal@gmail.com if you've got anything further that you'd like to share on the content of this show or really anything that we do here. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. Don't forget to tell your friends to subscribe and follow the show as well. That stuff really does help. SolidGiveaway.com, as I said at the very top of the show, you can go and sign up to win that signed mini helmet from AJ Brown, the Ole Miss variety. It's a white helmet. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Verballers.com is where you can find all the bonus stuff that we're proud of. The video of this show, get early access to this show, get access to Discord. Discord's been popping off as per usual. Many of you are listening to this on Thursday. There's a big U.S. soccer match tonight.
Oh, who is the, is this men's or
this
women's?
This is the Mexico game. This is in Azteca.
Men's or women's?
Men's.
Men's. Okay. Are you feeling good?
No.
What network is it on?
I think it's on Paramount Plus.
Great. Do you own it, or will you be pirating this game?
I don't own Paramount Plus. It was not included in the trade for you, but I do.
Are you
have
a subscriber?
I do have a $4.99 a month subscription.
Look at for you, the, big
for,
spender.
Just for March. Just for after March, I'm done.
Okay.
But I just bought it for World Cup qualifying.
Look at you. All right. It's all the time I have.
Anyway, if you're into that, you can go on Discord. We're going
to
be talking about it there. In the meantime, thank you, Dan. For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrand. We will be back with you next week. In the meantime, as always, stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.